Hello everybody, I'm here today with Ezekiel Trumper. That's a very hard name to say.
I know.
Did I pronounce it properly?
You pronounced it extremely well.
Very good. I went on
Unlike Google. Most Australians, you did.
No, I went on Google pronunciations.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, you're a lawyer with a lot of experience in family law. Tell me a little bit about your professional background.
I grew up in Argentina. I arrived in New Zealand in 1990. I did my first law degree in Argentina, my second law degree at NYU Law School, and then I graduated. I did an exam to graduate as a lawyer in New Zealand at the University of Auckland, and I've been practicing law ever since in New Zealand, Australia. I was a corporate lawyer. I even worked in aviation for many years, but for the past 15 years, I've done mainly family law.
Okay.
And it's interesting. I'm also not that enjoyable, but it's very interesting.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. And we happened to meet at an event the other day where you made it very clear to me you agreed with a lot of what I'm saying about family law.
Yes.
And were willing to talk publicly about it, and that's very rare.
Why is that?
Well, why do you think that is? Why are lawyers so nervous of speaking out the truth about this issue?
Well, A, because they have partners who maybe probably do not take it nicely or kindly that they're speaking publicly on an issue, because many lawyers work in partnerships and they have pressures from other corners. I don't. I'm completely independent. And
this is your own firm?
It's my own firm. I can do whatever I like. And also because many may interpret, perhaps, it's conjecture, that if they say what I'm going to say, female clients may not approach them. Probably could be against their commercial interests. I have a lot of female clients and they know what I think, and I don't think it's going to change anything. And the longer people keep quiet about these issues, the worse the problem is going to become.
Yep, good. Well, I'm very pleased to have you here today, because what I want to talk about is this new announcement by the federal government of the Family Law Inquiry. Mm-hmm. Now, this is going on ThinkSpot, the new platform, which is an international platform, so we have to explain a bit to the non-Australians about what's going on here. So this is our national government, and made a very brave decision to set up a federal family law inquiry, which includes terms of reference that incorporate issues such as false allegations of violence, mm-hmm. and also the failure of the court to enforce their contact orders, particularly fathers having contact with their children. And what they also did was included as deputy chair of this inquiry the appointment of a very controversial figure, Pauline Hanson, a politician who's been out for years and years speaking out about the family court having a bias against men. And on the day this inquiry was announced, she was out in the press saying this is a major problem, false allegations, women lying about allegations of violence, or allegations of sexual abuse of children for advantage in their family court matters. And of course, the reaction to that was the feminists piled on her, most of our mainstream media tore her apart, and they dragged out eminent person after eminent person saying, women never lie.
Really?
Yeah, well, you tell me, what do you reckon?
Well, I think that the problem that Senator Hanson identified, and she's not the first one to say so, but at least she's got a big profile and she can say that, is that the false allegations against men in court is like the silent epidemic.
Yeah.
That's what I would describe it. It's a silent epidemic. It's been happening for a long time. It is extremely easy to do. It is risk-free. It's almost cost-free. Just the mere allegation in an affidavit by a woman, or the mere filing of a notice of risk, will immediately have the effect of alienating the child from the father. Immediately.
Yeah.
Because
you can have the father removed from the home.
Just like that.
Yeah. No evidence.
It happened to me last week with a client.
Yeah.
A guy who'd never been charged with anything, but all of a sudden, one allegation by a previous family member, and she's been kicked out of the home and lost contact with the child. We're still trying to find out where the child is, actually. Yeah. We don't even know where it is 2 weeks later. So this is a sudden epidemic, and it's absolutely pertinent that the government they must realize that a lot of people are suffering, because not just men, we're talking about grandparents, we're talking about friends of these people, we're talking about the whole society.
I mean, I've been having people write to me about this, as you say, not just men, sisters of whose brother hasn't seen his children for 5 years.
Exactly.
You know, other, obviously second wives in that sort of situation, all sorts, anyone who's involved with men, who loves men, will have had experience of this. Yes. That's what really interests me about the decision of this government to push a family court inquiry in this direction. They obviously made a really calculated risk, calculation that the community gets it. The community, there are enough people in the community that have seen this happen to men that it really is in their interest to be seen as wanting to properly address it, which is a fascinating thing, because for years and years and years they've been kowtowing to the feminists. I mean, there was another inquiry just recently by the Family Law Reform Commission, which was all framed around violence. It had, in the terms of reference, 273 references to violence. That's all they were interested in. Promoting this idea that that women and their children are at risk from dangerous men, and that's the whole thing, the way the whole thing was framed. And of course the feminists are saying, well, why didn't the government respond to that, the recommendations of that particular inquiry? Why are they having another one? Well, I think it's just fascinating, because they've obviously decided that's not the whole issue, that was very distorted in a particular direction. And that's not what the parliamentarians are hearing from their constituents.
Well, I would imagine that judges and magistrates who deal with these issues, they must have had a quiet word with some members of the government. They will not go publicly on it, because it's obviously they're deciding on cases, and if they go public, there'll be a perception of bias by them in the future. So the government must be fully aware. Also, I would imagine MPs have people who actually go and see them in their offices, crying their hearts out, that they cannot even afford to get to a lawyer to fight for their rights.
That's right.
And it is so easy for a mother or a female, and I don't want to sound sexist, I'm sorry, but it's so easy for a female to alienate their child from the father. All they have to do, they go to police, and they say, my husband said or this, no evidence, untested.
Yep.
The first thing the police will do is to apply for interim orders. The orders will remain in place for quite a while. Then they file an application in the court. There are interim orders in place. And from that very moment, the father cannot see the child unless unsupervised for a long period of time. And this is until they get to an interim hearing, which will take, with any luck, 6 to 7 months or maybe more. And the interim hearing will listen to the versions of the parties. There's no right to cross-examine anyone. The judge will make a decision on the spot.
But they don't really examine the evidence.
None.
For the allegation.
Absolutely none. There's no, the parties have no right to cross-examine the other party's affidavit.
Yeah.
They have no right to call witnesses. And the magistrate or judge will make a decision. And there are interim orders in place. They will remain in place for years. Because until you get to a final hearing, we're talking about 2 or 3 years down the track, and I'm not counting the cost. So what ends up happening is that by the time they get to a final hearing, if they get to a final hearing because the parties can afford it, the child has already been alienated from the father.
That's right.
And the mother has done the job, because I hate to say this, parental alienation works.
Yeah, of course it does.
Works, because the judge or the courts that do not provide the tools for men to actually fight it effectively, quickly, which is the only way to address it. Because if you're going to address it 2 or 3 years down the track, the damage is done.
Yeah, and you're going to have fathers who've been the primary carers of those children, who suddenly don't see those children for 2 or 3 years.
Exactly. Or they see them rarely, or they see them supervised by somebody. They have to find somebody who's willing to supervise. They have to afford.
They have to pay for that.
They have to pay. They have to pay.
Yeah.
And sometimes they cannot afford it.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on and on.
And they have to drive halfway across Australia sometimes.
Yeah.
And then they turn up and, you know, I mean, so it goes on. But this is, I mean, this is a real, I think we need to go back. Well, one of the things I want to do is show our audience some of the evidence to show how widespread this is. You were talking about the magistrates.
Yeah.
And in fact, we've got some surveys here of magistrates in Queensland, for instance, where 74% agreed with the assumption that restraining orders are often used
74%?
For, yeah, for tactical purposes. In New South Wales, 90%, this group of magistrates, agreed that restraining orders are often used in this way. We had a retiring family court judge. Of course, you have to retire to be able to speak out about this.
Openly, yeah.
Yeah, and that was in 2013. And he said that the false abuse accusations have become a major weapon in the war between parents who wish to secure sole custody of their child. And also, there was a public survey, national survey, of over 12,000 people, and half of those people agreed that women going through custody battles often make up or exaggerate claims of domestic violence in order to improve their case. Which is interesting for me that half of them, and you would expect, of course, that the men would be more likely to agree, but in fact 42% of the women also agree
with that. Of course, they know. They have friends, or they know when their friends lie.
And so this is at the heart of this decision by the government to go ahead with this. The widespread knowledge in our community that this is a scandalous situation. Which has developed over years. My background in the whole family law area is that I've obviously been writing a journalist forever.
Oh, you're very well known in Australia, I have to say, for international audience. Yes.
Yeah. And years and years ago, probably nearly 40 years ago, I started to write about family law, and I got a letter from a retiring family court judge.
Okay.
And he just wrote out of the blue saying, "We've made an enormous mistake. This was in the days when we had custodial parents, so we hadn't begun to change the legislation there, that we've given too much power to the custodial parent, which is usually the woman, and that power is often being abused. And he talked then about false allegations and saying that was a widespread problem of allegations of domestic violence or allegations of sexual abuse with the child. And it's been there for decades and decades, this problem.
But the reason why the problem remains as serious as you portrayed is because there is no accountability when you do that. I mean, we can quote figures that no women, I don't know for how many years, have been referred to the police for perjury when making a false allegation that was later found by the same court to be absolutely unfounded.
Yeah.
So until they start prosecuting people for that, and the police would be very reluctant to do so unless there is very strong evidence, well, this will continue happening.
That's right. I was looking at the statistics on that. The family court last year confirmed it had not referred to anyone to the police for the last three years.
In 3 years, no one. No one lied in court in 3 years.
And yet, there are cases, as you say, where even on the basis of the limited evidence presented, the judge will obviously make a decision not to be concerned about the allegation of violence. So he's in effect saying,
"You're lying.
You're lying," and nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
He'll decide to allow the father shared custody or real substantial contact with their child, which makes it clear he's not or he or she doesn't believe in these accusations, and yet there's no consequences as the person who's been lied.
Well, the same happens with parental alienation. Some people may know, some may not, that in countries like Mexico or Brazil, parental alienation is a criminal offence.
Yeah.
There's currently some people lobbying in Britain to make parental alienation a criminal offence. And it should be a criminal offence.
Oh, we have a group here very actively lobbying on parental alienation. We're not making much progress.
No, until they do that, this will continue happening. I'm not saying that women should be regularly prosecuting for this, but the fact that there is a statute that says that if you alienate your child from the father or vice versa, it's a crime, it will be a deterrence just by itself. And I have no idea why the government is not legislating to that effect.
Yeah.
Because by doing so, who are they protecting? They have to protect the child. And instead of protecting the child, they're protecting the offender.
Yeah. That's right.
So, for the life of me, I don't understand it.
I just want to go a little bit into the changes in the legislation, because I was actually on government committees back in the John Howard era, and which first started looking at bias in family law. Mm. And funnily enough, I was there representing men because the Howard government realised that the Democrats were absolutely stacking who was going to be on these various committees. Mm-hmm. And they had, so they'd get a representative from a men's father's group, and they'd always try to choose the least effective person. and of course the women were formidable, wonderful women running the Lone Parent Association or whatever it was. So they were up against this barrage of, you know, really effective women. And the guys tended to, you know, well-educated men tend to fight their battles through lawyers, don't they?
I think it goes deeper than that. I think powerful men are embarrassed.
That's right. They won't join groups of victims.
Because they think that there's a bunch of losers.
That's right.
So powerful men are embarrassed to go and fight for their rights, and they hire lawyers. And I'm sorry to say this, but the legal system is not in your favor. It's not going to work like that.
No.
You're going to spend a lot of money and you're not going to get anywhere.
But it's always been an interesting thing that the women's groups are so much more effective than the men's groups because of that. Men won't join up with a bunch of losers.
Exactly.
And the well-educated, really effective men tend not to get involved politically. Mm. And that's why we've had this imbalance for years and years. And that's why we're not getting anywhere with all of this. That's good. Anyway, what happened was I got onto these committees and when they're battling on child support and family law. But eventually, Howard was an amazing prime minister because he was really interested.
And he had practiced family law himself.
That's right.
So he knew.
But he was interested in social issues. The only prime minister we've ever had who's really interested in family. And he introduced really important changes in the family law. Australia led the world in introducing a presumption of shared parental responsibility. Mm. Now, I know you've said you didn't feel it made much difference.
Did make much difference in practice now.
No, because you're talking about the pointy end. You're talking about the people who go into court. The evidence is that it made an enormous difference out in public, where most people don't end up, thank goodness, don't end up in court in Australia. Most people make decisions for themselves or sometimes go to a mediator.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the research, it showed a substantial increase in the number of parents making a decision to share parenting much more, not necessarily equal time, but
equal time never happens. And shared parenting is normally, in my experience, means that the father will have the child for about 4 or 5 nights per fortnight.
No, but I'm talking about what's happening in the community.
In the community. I'm talking about what happened in
and
real.
And that's what the research shows very clearly. It was sort of doubled the number of parents involved in it. They're defining shared care as at least a third of the time.
Okay.
So that's substantial. I mean, it's not equal parenting.
No.
But it's something. That family law change had a really important impact on the community. And what was just fascinating, as soon as the Howard government got tossed out, the Labor Party wound it all back. And what they used is this almighty weapon, which is violence. And the feminists have been systematically manipulating the system to say we need to introduce more
safeguards.
The safety concerns for the women and their children. And they wound back a lot of and tinkered with the legislation from then on. I mean, there was a penalty in place in terms of costs for perjury, and that was removed.
Yeah.
And they then in 2011 introduced new regulations, but that safety had to be the primary concern. And ever since, the violent card has absolutely dominated family court decision making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it still does in practice.
That's right. So your experience is what happens in the court, which is a tiny percentage of the divorces in Australia.
I'll be honest with you. When I tell my male clients, this may not sound very popular, but that's the truth. Every time I have a male client, and I have equal male and female clients, I said to the male clients, you're going to play an away game when we go to court. The system is stacked against you, I'm afraid, because of my experience. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I tell the opposite to my female clients, and I'm telling the truth in both instances.
But would you suggest to a female client she should, have you ever suggested she should make an allegation of violence?
No, I would never do that. Unless there was evidence. In fact, I had an instance many years ago when somebody came to see me with an allegation of sexual abuse against a child. I said, what is the evidence? And she could not articulate any other than her perception. Mm. And I said, I'm not prepared to put that forward. If you want to put that forward, find yourself another lawyer, but I'm not doing that.
I'd say you're pretty rare.
Well, maybe, well, my circumstances allow me, but my view is that lawyers, we are not mouthpieces for our client. We have to forensically test the evidence before us, before putting it forward. But maybe I'm not.
I'm not the exception. Sure, you hear of lawyers. I mean, I hear them all.
I listen. Other lawyers, I've seen terrible things. But no, I'm not going to name
them. It's widely known that they recommend women use this tactic.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it works.
Yeah.
But it's unethical. A lawyer should not do that. We are officers of the court at the end of the day. But in family law, maybe sometimes that doesn't happen. I'm sorry.
I mean, and in fact, when you say they win, who wins? The wife at the expense of the child, at the expense of the relationship.
The child is the loser.
The child
is the loser. They lose the care, comfort, security, safety of a parent.
Yeah.
And using children as pawns or hostages, I can't think of anything more immoral, really.
Yeah.
But it happens.
And no one talks about this?
No.
And in family law circles, do you talk to your colleagues about this issue?
Sometimes they do, but lawyers, we tend to be very skeptical and very cynic, and basically what we do is we get on with it, you know? Yeah. They're just like, they don't take a, most lawyers, unlike me, perhaps, don't take a moral stance.
Yeah.
They actually go in court, file the best case for the client, and that's it. They go home, collect the check, and see you later. But I remember some years ago, a very experienced QC said to me, you know what, Ezekiel? I had a terrible case with a male client who has been totally done over by, you know, it was a terrible case. And I said, this is terrible. I said, you know what, Ezekiel, parental alienation works extremely well in court. The whole system is designed for a woman to prevail in a circumstance like that. And at the end of the day, there are cases where parental alienation rewards the women with sole custody because the judge makes a decision that the relationship between the father and the child is so beyond repair because the child says he doesn't want to have he or she doesn't want anything to do with the father, that they award sole custody to the offending mother.
That's right. Well, there's been a lot of cases like that.
Yeah.
Not even when the child doesn't want to see the parent, but where the child might still want to be with the parent, and it's been proved that the woman has made malicious allegations and deliberately doing so to try to alienate the child. It may be there's been cases where the father's been the primary carer at the start of before they broke up, and still the judge will make the decision to leave the child with the parent who's deliberately tried to alienate. I mean, because they say this is what the child is used to. They've spent the last 3 years on their own with a single mum, and they reward that misconduct. It's the most extraordinary thing.
Well, I had a case a couple of years ago when the mother was clearly an unfit mother. She had a history of drug abuse. She had even a criminal record. My client had none of that. He was perfectly clean. The mother also has psychiatric issues. She suffered for anxiety and etc. And the judge, in an interim hearing, he said, well, I recognize that the mother has a lot of problems, but if I take the child away from the mother, I will aggravate the mother's psychiatric condition.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was sitting there and I said, I cannot say anything because I will be held in contempt, so I'd rather just shut up.
Yeah.
But that is the true story.
What about this issue of the mum judges and the dad judges? I mean, I know there are some good judges out there.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And because I've worked with a lot of lawyers who have been champions for men for years, and then they become judges, and they're in there doing their best. Do you ever come across them?
I'm reluctant to talk about judges for reasons you will understand.
But I mean, just in general, I don't mean individuals.
No, I understand.
But there are
judges and judges. After some are very good, some don't want to make a decision at all.
Yeah.
Some are slow, some are incredibly biased, but I'd rather not say who.
But some,
I know, I can think of a particular case.
If you have a man, you're representing a man, you must shudder when you see which judge you get sometimes.
Absolutely, yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, there's a particular female judge in some particular family court, which I'd rather not name, which really left me in despair, given the decision that she made. You know.
Someone was once doing a PhD or something, looking at judges' decisions in the family court, and I was desperate to get help, because they actually had individual records of judges.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying desperately to get hold of that research. I never managed to get it. But boy, it would have been fun to publish
that.
Well,
on the other hand, judges are so overworked.
I know.
You have to have some sympathy for them. They don't have the resources. Sometimes I appear in a court and it's a very important matter, and I file an affidavit of 35 pages, and the judge haven't even read it by the time I get to court.
Well, they've got years and years of delays
before
you even get to court, and then they have...
But I was in court.
I know, but that's the thing. Their paperwork must be just...
Yeah. Oh, they say, well, I'm going to take a few hours to read the documents, the affidavits, and I come back later. And I say, okay, fine, my client is paying $450, $500 an hour for you to read that. Okay.
Yeah. But that's the tax that the feminists are taking. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is give them more resources and solve all the problems. But in fact, I mean, some of the major problems won't be solved by however many resources we give them, which is, this is a court that doesn't enforce their orders.
No.
And that's always been the most scandalous aspect for me.
You can have the best order in the world. I mean, if it's breached, well, you have to make an application until you get a hearing. The damage is done. And nothing's going to happen to the other side. In theory, the court can impose a fine up to $1,000 or $1,500, but nothing ever happens.
Does that ever happen?
I don't remember the last time I even got an order for that. No. They make up some excuse.
They always feel, I mean, there's always this argument. So we were mainly talking about women denying contact with their children.
Yeah, blatantly.
And getting an order that they totally ignore.
Totally ignore. Nothing happens.
And everybody knows that's the case. This is a court which you can totally ignore and nothing will happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
In the last few weeks, the feminists in the media have been busily digging out the one or two cases where a woman has, a woman has been punished or in some way, or they reversed custody. Because there is this interesting aspect of the act.
Very rare.
The friendly parenting.
Friendly parenting.
The idea that there is a requirement under the act that you show that you do work to enhance the relationship between the children and the other parent.
Mm.
And that if you're regarded as an alienating parent, it could work against you. And of course, they're claiming that women can't use false violence accusations anymore because of that clause. What a joke. I mean, they had to dig very hard to get one or two examples where this has happened.
How can you have friendly parenting when you end up in court? And there's a contradiction in terms.
But it's an interesting concept that I mean, it does speak to that issue of parental alienation, that if you are the child, the person who has primary care, if you like, of the parent certainly should be the person who does most to enhance the relationship with the other parent. I mean, that makes perfect sense. It's just that it very rarely has any impact in the court, does it?
Well, in every court order, you'll find that there is a clause or an order that says that you cannot denigrate the other side, non-derogatory, and et cetera, et cetera. There is breach every day of the week and nothing. Yeah. I don't know, a single case. Yeah. Maybe the judge will say, well, you shouldn't have done that. Oh, please don't do that in the future. But that's about it.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. And that is part of the parental alienation exercise.
Absolutely.
I think the biggest problem we have here is parental alienation because these kids are losing their fathers.
Yeah.
For good.
For good. I should say the organisation lobbying for changes around parental alienation. It's called Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe. We'll put that up below this video so that people can get involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been working for years to try to do something about it. But it's absolutely...
I have not seen any politician ever raise the issue and say, we have to introduce legislation to make parental alienation a criminal offence outside the Family Law Act.
Yeah.
Until that happens, it will continue happening.
Yeah. But anyway, so it's good to see that this new inquiry does include discussion of this issue, enforcement of orders.
I hope so.
But it's very hard to know how to deal with that. I mean, we have a very good professor of family law called Patrick Parkinson, who used to be at Sydney, he's now up in Queensland. And he's been arguing that we should have some sort of separate court, some sort of separate judicial process regarding enforcement.
I think he's absolutely correct.
Yeah, because they just drive men into the ground because men can't afford to keep going back to court, can they?
Exactly. And another thing that happens is that, in my experience, many men ended up settling even though if they went all the way to court, they could actually get a better result because they don't have the resources.
Yeah.
And during that process, they don't have access to the child in the way they want to. So they prefer to sell themselves short.
Or they think it's in the interest of the child to stop fighting. I mean, it's a tragic thing.
It's a tragic situation.
That putting the children through more and more interviews, putting the children through more and more conflict is probably going to be worse than just disappearing. I suppose I can't tell you how many men I've talked to about that.
No, yeah.
It's really sad.
It's a tragic story. I mean, as you reported many times, men's mental health is severely affected by this.
That's why they're killing themselves.
Well, suicide is actually the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Because some of them go into deep depression or worse, and they become basically with some disability in terms of work, because it affects their whole life. They can't work.
No.
It's a terrible situation for them.
That's right.
And so this inquiry is most welcome. I'm only a bit skeptical as to whether or not the recommendations will be implemented, given the lobby.
Well, even getting any decent recommendations is going to be hard enough.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I mean, I suppose I feel, I'm not hopeful about any big change. I just think this is a really useful exercise to ventilate what's going on there, like the Royal Commission into Sexual Abuse of Children, you know, to have those, well, that's what's going to be interesting. Will our media report these cases?
No, they will go, they started with the character assassination of the messenger that was Pauline Hanson.
Yeah.
And so they started with that. They're going to get into Kevin Andrews, who's well known as a conservative.
Yeah.
So.
That's the chairman.
Yeah, as the chairman. So they, the Fairfax, the Nine Media, as they call it now, and the ABC will not report this in a fair matter. I can assure you that.
Anyway, well, look, it's been great talking to you today.
No, it's been
we'll
a pleasure.
Have to have more conversations because this is obviously going to be an ongoing issue as the inquiry develops. And if nothing else, it's going to be very entertaining.
It's been a pleasure, and I will welcome the opportunity to do it again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody for supporting me on my YouTube channel. I've got growing numbers of subscribers, which is really exciting. If you'd like to support me financially, go to my donate page on my website. Thanks a lot.